The Guardian.
Football Weekly is sponsored by Squarespace. Make your next move and create your next website using Squarespace's all-in-one platform. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code Football Weekly to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain.
Never mind the ballots, here's the Football Weekly Extra. And ahead of the upcoming election, eerie parallels in this week's Champions League action. Folk putting optimistic crosses in boxes, but still having little to show for their labour, and an old lady crushing the opposition. We take a look at a vintage midweek of action and cast an eye forward at the weekend's games. FA Cup, uh-oh Spurs, it's at Wembley, Lyon Monaco, and so much more. Plus, big names on their way back, including, in a big week for Monaco fans, the return of Harry Redknapp. It's all in this Football Weekly Extra. Yes, that's right, listeners. Here we go with what promises to be a particularly savoury Football Weekly Extra. We've got you, Philippe Auclair, in. Bonjour, Philippe.
Bonjour, James. Were you referring to the French presidential election, by the way?
Yeah.
Do you know it's this Sunday?
What?
Uh-huh. Sunday morning, I'll be at the Lycée Français casting my vote.
Okay. All right, then. Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed, eh?
Poof, everything.
Everything crossed.
Absolutely. Who has elections on a Monday? Sunday,
well, that's Barry Glendale.
Because people don't work on a Sunday, which means it's easier for them to go to the local polling station.
So the election's on
Sunday. Which, of course,
is
completely crazy. So the election's on Sunday, yeah. And then 2 Sundays later, we've got the second round, the return leg.
Oh, right, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do away votes count double? James Horncastle's here.
Hello.
Hi, James. Hey, sorry, I've just got Champions League on the brain after that extraordinary 2 days of action. It was a set of days that presented a dilemma for football fans, though, which game to watch, because they all looked, you know, there were so many narratives at play. What did you go for, Barry?
I went for Juventus-Barcelona and Bayern Munich-Real Madrid.
Right, I think that's probably a winning choice. James, what about you?
I went for exactly the same as Barry. Yeah.
Philippe, I'm guessing you didn't.
I took the hipster's choices.
All right.
Which were basically Atletico, Leicester and Monaco against Dortmund.
Right, okay.
Or rather Leicester-Atletico.
I started with Leicester-Atletico.
You should have stuck with it.
Yeah, but at half-time when it looked like Atletico scored, so I switched over to the big game at the Bernabeu, and you're saying I missed out all the fun.
I genuinely think that the second half was one of the most exciting halves of football I've seen this season.
Really?
It was absolutely terrific. Well, Leicester nearly did it. That's what quite extraordinary. It's the first time I've seen Atletico as flustered as this.
Really?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, two shots, you know, goal-bound shots being blocked on almost on the line and constant barrage of shots and Ulloa having probably the best game he's ever had for, best 45 minutes he had for Leicester.
Right.
They had two great chances of going 2-1 in the second half and there would have been still time to do something afterwards. And honestly, Atletico looked really rattled, and you could see the body language of Diego Simeone. He was not happy at all with what he was seeing, and rightly so. When you think of Leicester didn't have a single shot at an attempt at goal in the first game, they had one in the first half, and they had something like 15 or 16 in the second. It was absolutely brilliant.
Wow, I can't believe all this was going on while us mugs were watching that nothing game at the Bernabeu. There were some shots in that, though, to be fair. How many was it?
Shots fired after the game as well, by a lot of those Bayern Munich players.
45 shots in the 90, which is the second most they've ever been in the Champions League. Only the 2012 final between Barcelona and Chelsea saw more. That was 52 in that game, apparently. Anyway, in many ways, was a classic game, but yet it wasn't the game I enjoyed the most, and I think the refereeing had a lot to do with that. Is that wrong?
Not at all. I think it keeps happening, doesn't it? We saw it in the Barca-PSG game. The miraculous comeback from Barca was in some way tarnished by some of the refereeing decisions in that game. We saw PSG send a dossier to UEFA after that. Remember, if you cast your mind back to last year as well, Juventus were very aggrieved in their game against Bayern Munich when Morata had a perfectly valid goal ruled out for a non-existent offside. And again, in a game of this magnitude, decisions really impacting that game. Thomas Muller said in extra time it wasn't 10 against 11, it was 10 against 14.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Giancarlo Rinaldi says, I hope Ancelotti headbutts Zidane at the end of this. Richard Hughes, you know, of Bournemouth and BT Sport, says, could have been an all-time classic. This instead, it becomes one of the all-time biggest farces. Unforgivable, he says.
That sort of sums it up. The standard of refereeing in the Champions League this year has been appalling. The first leg of these games, there was sort of very contentious decisions in almost all of them. And yeah, that what should have been an absolute classic was spoiled by incompetent, at best, refereeing.
Hmm. Raphael Honigstein suggesting that Bayern shouldn't feel too harshly done by that. They played a part in their own downfall across the two legs, particularly in Arturo Vidal's case.
I think even though you could say that Vidal shouldn't have been sent off because he clearly got the ball and it was the wrong decision to give him a red card, he always gives you the impression that he is a walking red card and that it was only a matter of time before he got that second bookable offence because, he's on the edge all the time. It's right.
Well, what you should also mention from that game, the tremendous own goal. Absolutely wonderful from Sergio Ramos.
He does everything 100%, doesn't he?
And the performance of Marcelo.
Do you think there's a case to be made for the fact that perception of his performance is also linked to the fact that this Real Madrid is by no means this kind of singing or dancing team? And then when you have a genuinely adventurous, enterprising player like Marcelo, this magnificent run to give the offside goal to Ronaldo, for example, you know, it jumps to your mind. You think, wow, this guy is absolutely fantastic. Because to be honest, it was a cracking game. Right. I wish it afterwards, I have to say. I had my mind on more important things at the King Power Stadium. But maybe that's why the contrast between the spirit of adventure of Marcelo and what is genuinely not the most exciting Real Madrid team in memory.
Right. A Real Madrid team, though, that has booked its way into the seventh straight Champions League semi-finals with yet more goals from Cristiano, a perfect hat-trick. Although, admittedly, two of the goals were offside, were they?
Yep.
Two? Yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, they go through to the draw, which is on Friday. And obviously, there were two other games going on this midweek. Barcelona's clash with Real Madrid and events at the Louis II. Mm-hmm. But before we touch on those, shall we dial up our chum, Sid Lowe, who is a doctor and is in Madrid?
Hello, Jimbo. Guess where I am, just for old time's sake.
Are you at Real Madrid's training ground?
No, I'm in the back of a taxi.
Ah! Philippe wins Sid Lowe bingo.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Sid, you're in a taxi on your way back from Barcelona. And three questions, really, I have for you here. Let's start with what happens now for the Catalans. Shut down, castrated almost by the old lady.
I suppose that's a nice image. I suppose obviously the first thing that happens is they finish the season and they try to win the league, which begins with a Clásico this weekend against Real Madrid. And if they don't win that, that's it. They can't win the league. I think even if they do win that, there's a reasonable chance that they won't win the league still because we could have a significant advantage.
Well, just on the subject of the Clásico, Sid, no Neymar, who looked their best player. I mean, certainly the most dangerous up front. Last night,
he's been really, really quite good this year, and he hasn't been scoring goals, and his goal scoring stats are a long, long way below what they were last season. But I think he's been really important for them. He opens the game out, he runs at people, he makes things happen, and I think he's a big loss for them in the Clásico, not least because Arda Turan would be the natural replacement. Perhaps isn't quite the right word because he's nowhere near the player that Neymar is, or then he's not quite the style of player that Neymar is. But he would be the person you would choose with Neymar absent, but he's not available. So I think that will make it a lot harder for them in the Clásico at the Bernabéu, of course, against Real Madrid side who have so much variety and always seem to find a way through, even if they don't always play well. Beyond that, you say, what do Barcelona do next? Well, you know, in kind of organisationally, the first thing is to resolve the issue of who the new manager will be, which is probably going to be Ernesto Valverde from Athletic Bilbao. Then they need to think about what they do in terms of signings in the summer. A central midfielder, a right back at the very least, and probably more than that. They've got a couple of other issues they need to resolve, one of which is what happens with Andres Iniesta now. Does he renew his contract? And his pre-game press conference before the Juventus match was very, very pessimistic, not just in terms of whether or not they could turn it round, but he was kind of cold and evasive on the question of his future as well. And clearly, I think he would like to stay, but not to play a reduced role. That, of course, will partly depend on what the new manager wants to do. So they've got a lot of issues they need to resolve. And the other one, the big one, and we've talked about this before, is Messi still hasn't renewed a contract, his contract with Barcelona as well. So they've got quite a lot to sort out.
Sid, there's been a lot of people, and this isn't the first time that they've called time on the Barcelona era, and there's a lot of people suggesting that this is going to be the beginning of the end for the Catalan giants, at least for a while. While that might be overdramatic, do you think they are in for a fallow season or two?
Well, I mean, the answer, I suppose, is yes, because this season's going to be fallow, isn't it? You know, they could still win the league, but at the moment, it's not very likely. They're out of the Champions League in the quarterfinals, which I think I'm right in saying is the third time in 4 years now. They are in the Copa del Rey final against Alaves. Okay, they could win the Copa, the Copa, but the Cup really doesn't save a season for a club like Barcelona.
And the kind of work they've got to put in. I mean, you were talking about the
it's significant. It really, really is significant. I mean, you say in terms of this being an end of an era. I mean, it definitely is on one level at least because the manager's going, because they're still not sure about Andres Iniesta, because of course there's quite a lot of work to be done. But I suppose they've kind of been for a little bit of this over the last 4 or 5 years. So the departure of Pep Guardiola, then the Tata Martino year, which was a bit of a joke, really. Then, of course, you had Tito Villanova dying. A series of moments at which it probably could have slipped away from them. And I think, actually, beneath the surface, it probably was slipping away from them bit by bit. The departure of Xavi Hernandez and Andres Iniesta means that it's never going to be that generation again. We're not a million miles away from a period in which Messi stops playing, and obviously, as I say, before we even get to that point, they need to get to a point where they resolve his contractual situation. Right. So I think this season is going to be a fallow season. I think there's a reasonable chance that next season is as well, but let's see how they build in the summer. Let's see what the new manager does, because a team that's got Messi, Suarez and Neymar in it, even if the rest of it is disastrous, is still going to be in with a chance of winning things, as indeed this year has proven, because across midfield this year, Barcelona have been really, really terrible. Those front three have actually been genuinely very good all season. And it's curious when you look at it player by player and think about who've been the best players in Spain this season, you would possibly even have as many from Barcelona as Real Madrid, but the collective functioning has fallen apart. And Barcelona don't seem as capable of assimilating not playing well as Real Madrid are.
Sid, of course, with all of that, if they go and win this Sunday night at the Bernabeu, you could have your High Liga all over again, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
But
of course.
But they're taking on this Real Madrid team that's just made its way through to the Champions League semi-finals for the seventh straight year. And oh my word, their neighbours Atleti are there as well. Once again, two Madrid teams in the last four. It's remarkable.
And of course, we were all talking about this last night as well, and colleagues here are kind of very conscious of this doubt in your mind. You think, do you want a Madrid derby in the final, or do you want it in the semi-final? Do you want to try and avoid it? Would you rather it happens? And the big question, of course, with that isn't so much what we as journalists or fans or just viewers would like, but the sort of underlying question there is, what do Atletico Madrid want? Do they want Real Madrid and the chance for revenge? Or emotionally, do they just really desperately want Madrid out of the competition? You know, do they desperately want Madrid against Juventus in the semi-final and Madrid knocked out? And I must admit, I don't know the answer to that.
No. Well, we'll see on Friday with the draw. Listen, safe travels home, Sid. Many thanks for making us part of your journey in both a literal and metaphorical sense. And we'll catch up with you soon.
My pleasure. Cheerio.
What do you think the taxi driver thinks Sid was doing there? Because he'll have just seen this Englishman or heard this Englishman jabbering into a phone, occasionally saying names he recognises, assuming the taxi driver doesn't speak English.
I don't know, Barry.
But Sid is
taking it on to a whole
well-known figure in Madrid. I mean, I don't know if he pays for his taxis anymore.
Right.
He's so famous.
Yeah, he's on the telly, isn't he? Yeah.
He's on the telly all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Two other games we haven't really touched on yet. How about your Monaco then? Now, if Monaco goes through, and I know, Barry, you won't rescind any of your French bottling stuff until they actually win a Champions League.
Bottling?
Yeah, but we're getting close.
I've put that to bed now. I won. I won. I've put the whole French bottling thing in a biscuit tin under the bed.
You won that night at the Bernabeu?
No, just the PSG capitulation.
That's what I'm saying.
That proved my point.
That ended the argument. Yes. Okay. All right. Well, let's treat Monaco as a separate issue because they are off to from the principality.
I love watching Monaco.
Aren't they fantastic? Well, look, you'll be excited to know that this Sunday you can see them on BT Sport. They're going to be away at Lyon. And what... Yeah, assuming the game gets played and there's no crowd trouble this time. It should be a great game because Lyon are a pretty snazzy side as well. But Monaco, when was the last time you...
Lyon are playing at Besiktas tonight.
Yeah.
We hope. It started well, I think, yesterday because the Besiktas Ultra, I think, hired a few barges and plonked themselves in the middle of the Bosphorus and started shooting in the air.
Fireworks.
Fireworks. Yeah. So that should be interesting. Just after UEFA has decided to punish the clubs by excluding them without excluding them
right
from all competitions for 2 years.
It's suspended.
That's what I was saying.
Oh, okay. So,
but you have to say if there is trouble tonight.
Yeah, could be nasty. Okay.
Yeah, and Lyon at the moment is very odd because they're also in trouble after all what happened against Bastia, which we should have
We'll talk about it later on. You know what? I'm not saying it's not important.
No, it's
I'm not saying it's not important.
Because
but
it's
is
news.
It Kylian Mbappe important? That's my point.
It is news because...
We'll talk about it in part three in our special news section.
Okay.
No, because we do...
They were wonderful.
All right. Kylian Mbappe.
Yes, him.
Best teenager ever?
Yes. No.
What?
At anything?
Of course not.
Let me just give you some numbers.
Best teenager ever to play for Monaco. Yes.
Okay. 5 goals in the Champions League knockout stages.
Including is the first teenager to score in every single of the 4 knockout rounds that he's taken part in. It's quite extraordinary.
Ronaldo's a scoring machine, yeah? But Mbappe's got as many goals as him in this year's competition.
5, is that
That's right?
Right,
yes. 5.
In a completely different register, and his goals were not offside.
Right.
Meow.
Wow. Right, okay, so you like Mbappe.
Everybody loves Kylian Mbappe.
What about Thomas Lemar, though?
Yeah.
And everybody loves Thomas Lemar, and everybody loves Benjamin Mendy.
And what about Monaco in general? Does everyone love Monaco? Are they everyone's
second team
now?
The team, yes. The club, no, because the club, you know, it's this really weird situation where they have an extraordinary advantage over the rest of Ligue 1 in terms of their tax system, or rather their absence of a tax system. Mm.
They pay less taxes than a British newspaper.
Is this the moment to have the Harry Redknapp reference here? No, not quite. Not right now. But that's a huge advantage. But this said, what they're doing has got nothing to do with their financial muscle, apart perhaps with the presence of Radamel Falcao, who probably would have never joined Monaco in the first place if it hadn't been for the tax advantages. But this is such a young, and for once you can use the word, vibrant team. Okay. Everybody loves them. I mean, you know, who cannot... Not love them.
This is also Cal's first Champions League season, though. So he never played in the Champions League before until now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. That's remarkable.
So I mean, you look at the average age of that team, and which leads me to one of my favourite rants, which is about teams not being able to grow together.
Right. Well, part of the issue there is the people watch this Monaco side and they think, yeah, but it'll probably get broken up in the summer. And after a performance like... the one that he put in against Dortmund, people are saying, wow, the big money moves already on from Mbappe. Now,
It could be other players.
Right.
It doesn't some would have to say be Mbappe.
That, but, okay, but some would say that Monaco...
Bernardo Silva.
Yeah. Some would say that Monaco are going to hang on to Mbappe for at least another year. Is that your understanding, Philippe?
Yes, correct. That's what I was told from a very reputable source not that long ago. This being said... the value of the boy now is just phenomenal. So there will be a temptation to think, okay, let's take 100 million. Which honestly, because it's a club that is run completely differently now compared to when Ribolovlev arrived, which was basically they spend their way up with Claudio Ranieri to go into Ligue 1 and then afterwards to stay there at a very high level.
Right.
This is different. And I think one of the reasons why people are so enamored with them, apart from the fact that they're just absolutely brilliant to watch. Mm. And they're very also a sporting team, I have to say. And is how they've completely reinvented themselves within a couple of months with a manager. I would say that, hang on to that manager, guys. Nobody is much linking Jardim with big jobs, which is amazing when you see what he's achieved.
Or Arsenal.
I tell you what, there would be worse choices than that. Yeah. Because he's shown he's capable of organising one of the soundest defences in European football. That was last year. And now he's engineered a complete change which is now you've got the most exciting team probably in Europe.
If only he could do both at the same time.
Well, to be honest, they're leading. They're not doing too badly, are they? They're leading Ligue 1
on
merit and on merit. Oh,
but they do have a game in hand on
PSG.
They
have a game in hand.
But that's a huge game this Sunday on BT Sport when they travel away to Lille. Not an easy fixture, that.
No,
of course, they're
it's
in a
not.
Cup semi-final too. Mm-hmm. Philippe, in a word, can Monaco win this Champions League?
Or of course,
is
this, yes.
Is there an issue?
Juve is still my favourite.
Really?
And it was my favourite from a long time ago. I actually succumbed to a bet quite a while ago.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and Juve making Juve my bet, my little pick for the title.
Okay.
But yeah, Monaco have got at least to do as well as they did in 2003-2004.
Get
it's a better
final.
Team than the 2003-2004.
Okay. Right. Better manager, perhaps, as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We'll
absolutely.
We'll pause there, and we'll be back talking about the team we haven't mentioned yet, Juventus.
Create a beautiful website or online store with an award-winning template from Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code FOOTBALLWEEKLY to get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website.
One thing I'd like to add about Monaco, if that's all right.
Yeah, go for it.
Another remarkable thing about them is that they're only the second team in the history of the Champions League to reach the semi-finals after having played two preliminary rounds,
ooh,
which is quite extraordinary. And they were against very difficult opponents, as in Fenerbahce and Villarreal, when nobody actually thought that Monaco was going to be necessarily fantastic.
Good point.
And when you see, the first one, by the way, was Dynamo Kiev in 1998-1999.
Hmm.
The great Dynamo Kiev, I think Shevchenko was still at the...
Yeah, Rebrov.
Yeah. And if you look at the team that they've gone past, I mean, I know there are no superpowers, but Fenerbahce, Villarreal, CSKA Moscow, Tottenham, Bayer Leverkusen, Manchester City, Borussia Dortmund, this is pretty damn impressive.
Right.
So hats off, chapeau to Monaco.
Chapeau, indeed.
Beret to Monaco.
Right. But yet you make Juventus the favourites.
Mm-hmm.
Juventus who are fresh from probably the greatest 0-0 of all time. At the Nou Camp. I mean, it was fantastic to watch, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it really was. And Juventus probably had the first two chances of the game that fell to Higuain.
Mm.
And
he was a bit of a lump, though, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah.
And Allegri, before the game, said he wanted to score two goals. And I don't think that was necessarily out of fear that they would concede. I think there was a degree of realism, but I think he really believed that they could go there and score. I don't think the intention was to basically park the bus like Inter did in 2010, but still, what a defensive masterclass that Bonucci and Chiellini put on.
It was like Neo in The Matrix with Barca as Agent Smith, you know, where they go all fast forward. And he was just, not even looking.
Yeah, but I mean, Juventus' defensive record in this competition so far, they've only conceded two goals in 10 games. I think only Ajax in 95-96 and Arsenal in 2005-2006 did that. Both reached the final and lost in the final. And they also, they shut out this Barcelona team with the MSN, which has scored 92 goals in both legs.
Right. Well, yeah, they were averaging a goal every 32 minutes in the Liga, Champions League and Copa del Rey against Juve, none in 180. They did have chances, though. Both legs, they did have chances.
Yeah, and in fact, I think one of the biggest chances that fell to them last night was... it came from a Gigi Buffon mistake, didn't he? When he kind of fluffed the cross that came in and the ball came back
in. He did a Joe Hart.
He did a bit. He did. Not as bad as Joe Hart as recently. But still, I think this Juventus team has such a great belief about them at the moment. There was a Leonardo Bonucci posted on Instagram last night a video of him before the quarterfinal draw in which he said, if we get Barcelona on Friday the 17th in this draw, we will knock them out, signed Leonardo Bonucci.
Right, well, there you go. Who do you think they want in the next round?
I think they want anyone other than Atletico Madrid.
Right.
Because I think Atletico are the one team that they're coached by an Argentinian who is essentially Italian in their Diego Simeone's kind of coaching education, football education, Italian. And they're the one team that has really kind of, I think Allegri struggled to figure out. They played in the group stages in 2015. When Juventus went on and got to the final, but they finished behind Atleti in the group. They lost at the Calderon. and they couldn't really lay a glove on them. But they've come a long way since then. And Allegri's been saying that this team, particularly in the last 2 years, is just not the same discomfort as they were against certain teams, you know, Real Madrid, you Bayern Munich, you Barcelona, as they were then.
Could use of years.
Years, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, so
it would be in some ways darkly fascinating, but in other ways utterly horrifying tie that Juventus against Atletico Madrid. Yeah, not sure whether. Sorry, Philly.
Yeah, just a couple of questions for James. First of all, are they in Turin talking about the fact that Paul Pogba is no longer there and that nobody seems to remember he was, used to be playing for this team, first thing? And second thing, can they hold on to the iron guard?
Well, at the beginning of the season, they were talking about the big difference between Juventus in 2015 and 2017 is the midfield. There was a belief at that time that the midfield was better in Berlin than the one that they've got now. And you look at it, and it was a pretty formidable midfield of Marquisio, Vidal, Pogba and Pirlo.
But this one whittles all over that
with
one.
Pjanic and Khedira.
Pjanic
hasn't been amazing. Pjanic has been good, but he was very, very good last night.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Across the two legs, but last night he was extraordinary, I thought.
Yeah, I think Bonucci and Chiellini stole the headlines, but he was very good last night. And I think that's what they've tried to do in taking this team away from Conte's, is make them more of a skill and finesse team, so that when they go away to these to Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Bayern Munich, they can actually mix it when it comes to keeping the ball. They had no problems moving it up the pitch against Barcelona in both legs. I think Allegri also feels that they've got a lot more diversity in attack than they did back then. Got a lot more options as well on the bench to change the game.
Right. Your iron guard question? Keeping hold of Chiellini and Bonucci? Mm.
Definitely Chiellini. I mean, Bonucci signed a new contract, but there was that tension between Allegri and him before the Porto game, but I think that's been put to bed.
Right. Well, draw's coming up on Friday, so that'll be fun. Now, returning to more domestic issues. After last weekend's title race plot twist, the leading teams, Chelsea and Spurs, take a weekend off from their duel and play in the FA Cup instead. Only they're going to be facing each other. Barry, how exciting is that?
It's very exciting. I'm looking forward to it. Right. I think Spurs will win.
Oh, really?
I do.
At Wembley. Yeah. At Wembley, Barry.
I'm making that big call, yeah. I just think they're irresistible at the moment.
Not that the FA Cup is not as important, etc., but winning this in the Cup, would that have an impact on Chelsea, who are clearly already wobbling, in the Premier League as well? Getting beaten by Spurs, would it put the pressure on them?
I don't think
it would necessarily. Right. You're backing Spurs. Tell us why.
I just can't see anyone beating them at the moment. Really? They're just so good.
But Chelsea have beaten them.
Yeah, but at the moment, at this current period of time,
right?
I don't think there's anyone in the country to hold a candle to Spurs. Obviously, the Wembley thing is a concern in that they seem to have a mental block when it comes to playing there. But I really do fancy them for this one.
Right.
Sorry about that.
No,
Spurs fans.
Both of them dominate the PFA Team of the Year, of course, don't they?
Although Dave Ellis pointing out the fact that the best centre-back in the Premier League, as he puts it, didn't make it in. Toby Alderweireld, head, shoulders and long neck better than Gary Cahill, who does make it in. Mm-hmm. George Dugdale responding, adding Premier League footballers to my list of people you can't trust in a vote. Here's a stat about Alderweireld. Of the 374 fouls that Spurs have conceded this season in the league, he accounts for 7. It's remarkable. Indeed, in 5,500 Premier League minutes since the start of last season, he's only committed 16. That's courtesy of Football 365. Those are big numbers. I'm not sure what they mean. It sounds good.
It means that he doesn't rely on brute force to do his job. And he's clearly an absolutely superb central defender. And yet the fact that Cahill is ahead of him in PFA 11 is just a... ludicrous.
Astonishing,
really.
Isn't it?
Well, it's ludicrous.
Are you possibly putting that down to parochialism? Or?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
The fact that Cahill's English.
Yeah. Yes. I don't, I'm just a theory. I don't know.
Cahill has a very good season, and nobody's denying that. But I think probably they felt that because Chelsea, at the time the votes were cast,
right,
were seemingly about to win the league easily. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. The votes were cast a little bit too early, I think.
Yeah,
one thing about this
February,
Chelsea...
Isn't it? They cast the vote?
I think it in March, whereas for the FWA, it only starts on the 24th
right.
of
so
April,
it was,
for example.
It was basically before Chelsea got man flu and lost this weekend that the votes were cast. And that's now what they're saying happened, the Man United game. We said it was won by Mourinho, but it turns out a virus was responsible, which I know some people will make a kind of ironic joke about, but they're different things.
You could also argue that Marcos Alonso was probably the Chelsea defender who deserved to be in the PFA 11.
Right.
He's absolutely magnificent and was a huge, huge loss when they played at Manchester United. Interesting thing about this...
Well, he was missing because of this virus, of course, at Old Trafford.
I was literally 2 yards away from Marcos Alonso when he left the pitch during the interview, and he was holding his left thigh footballers do when they've got a little muscular problem. A funny
Producer
thing,
Ben says it's a thyrus then.
Oh, that's magnificent.
Yeah.
An amusing thing about this Chelsea Spurs semi-final, and I'm not responsible for this, it's our friend Miguel Delaney who found this out, is that it's only the second time since World War II that the two top teams in the league are also meeting each other in a semi-final of the FA Cup.
That's interesting, isn't it?
The first time was, of course, the 1998-1999 Manchester United-Arsenal game that everybody remembers. Ryan Giggs showing all his hair.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Things.
So just in terms of Spurs players missing out on the PFA Team of the Year, I think Christian Eriksen's a glaring omission. He seems to be criminally underrated.
Yeah.
But just his consistency, I'd possibly have him in there ahead of Sadio Mane. But, I mean, I wouldn't begrudge Mane his place either. But, yeah, Eriksen just doesn't seem to be appreciated for the massive contribution he makes.
Right. Do Philippe and James share Barry's optimism for Spurs' chances of making it to the final?
Well, there's always been a question about Conte in cup competitions, at least at club level, because he got to the Coppa Italia final in his first year with Juventus, but they lost to Napoli, I think. You've seen Conte in European competition as well, to some extent fall short. I think his match preparation is second to none, so I think that's more...
You fancy Chelsea?
I do. I think...
It's okay to say it, James.
Yeah, I do.
Philippe?
Bizarrely, I would be tempted to go with James on this one.
Really? How bizarre is that? Agreeing with James Dark.
Well, agree with James on this, but I think that it's just pure intuition, to be honest. It's too close to call this one.
Well, the two teams after the clash on Saturday will be resuming their Premier League duel next midweek. Chelsea hosting Southampton, while Spurs have to visit Palace, which can be a very interesting game. We'll look at those matches in Monday's show. The other semi-final, meanwhile, on the Sunday, has Arsenal taking on Man City. Did you see Arsenal's big win away at the Riverside?
Watched that, yeah.
What did you make of their new defensive resilience with this fancy new three at the back tactic?
Yeah, but no resilience to talk about.
Right.
Well, if you allow
Middlesbrough
to score, then you've got a problem.
Managed to shut down that Middlesbrough attack. That
famous Middlesbrough attack.
It wasn't convincing at all. No, it wasn't convincing at all. And also, I found some of the decisions to play Young Holding, for example. I don't know. I mean, I was a little bit surprised by that.
Right.
Worked out all right in the end, but the team still lacks any kind of substance. The body language is awful. Awful. And in terms of defensive organisation, Middlesbrough have scored, 23 goals? So not exactly the harshest of tests.
Right, one of which came in this match.
Well, yes, indeed. Yeah. And Negredo, a bloody good goal, by the way.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
Yeah. And in which the central defence was entirely at fault.
Right. Well, this weekend's opponents do score goals. Man City, indeed, have notched up three in three of their last four matches in the Premier League, at least. And there's some word that Gabriel Jesus might be making a surprise return for this game. That sounds crazy. It was only the other day that he was on a kind of mobility scooter in the Arndale shopping centre.
In any other season, it's a game that we would have been looking forward to with great excitement. I think
it could be quite entertaining, though.
Buh.
It could be.
Yeah,
could be entertaining. Yes,
right.
Yeah, it could be entertaining.
And Arsenal have been at their best in the FA Cup.
Well, in fairness, they haven't had an extraordinarily difficult road to the final.
That's true. Lincoln, Sutton, Southampton as well, and Preston.
Yes.
Is this their best chance of getting into the Europa League, Arsenal?
That is cruel, but yes.
Okay.
Do they want to get in the Europa League?
I don't know.
I very much doubt it.
I think they would want to, if only for one reason, is that you when you are a season ticket holder at Arsenal, you also get 7 cup games. And I think the subscribers would quite like to see European football next year at the Emirates. Even
would
if
they
it's a Europa
rather
League?
Sacrifice European football to go full on for the league title rather than ponce around in the Europa League, which...
The idea of Arsenal going for the league title next season is somewhat far-fetched.
Really?
Is it?
Are they that far off? It's only a couple of years ago that they were challenging.
The club at the moment, I mean, what's happening in the team? I mean, I'm Wengered out myself, so let's not talk about it.
All right. Are you Wengered out?
Yeah.
What about their war chest, though, Philippe?
They've got a war chest,
They've got
yes.
a war chest.
Yes.
There you go.
What will they do with it?
I don't know. What are they going to do with it?
Will they, you know, take the doubloons and...
I don't know.
And buy another Shaka.
Did you see Baron Trump wearing a Arsenal kit on the lawn of the White House this week?
I saw a link to.
Please
Baron
tell
Trump.
Me he had a Wenger out banner.
Well, has it got to do with the fact that Stan Kroenke gave $1 million
yeah.
for the inauguration of President Donald?
A million, I think.
$1 million.
A million dollars, yeah.
Who knows?
Very interesting. Are Man City going to give Arsenal a very painful afternoon on Sunday?
I think so. Although I think even if these teams go on and win this competition, it's not enough to make their seasons a positive season.
All right.
But it would be an absolute... I mean, it would be a failure. It would be a failure for both, but for Guardiola, good grief. That would be absolutely terrible, wouldn't it?
To be out of the...
Oh, my gosh. Oh, well, you think, you know, they went out... to Monaco in crazy fashion. They have no hope of winning the title. They were taken out of the League Cup by Manchester United. And then to lose to Arsenal in semi-final of the FA Cup, well, come on, that's a bit much, isn't it?
Yeah, well, when you put it like that, brilliant. Okay, well, after this, 16 teams are taking part in Premier League action this weekend. We'll talk about those games after this.
Football Weekly's official shaving partner, Cornerstone, have just launched their brand new razor. There's no gimmicky name, but it's born of an obsession to design a classic razor that gives you an even closer, smoother shave than ever before. Try it for yourself and take £10 off your first order at cornerstone.co.uk/guardian.
Yeah, elsewhere in the Premier League, well, it looks interesting. There's a relegation picture, I suppose. You've got Bournemouth 7 points off the drop. Palace are level of them with them, but they have a game in hand. Bournemouth can pretty much wrap up safety this weekend when they host Middlesbrough.
They'll be without Jack Wilshere, though.
Yeah, Jack Wilshere's season is over.
Jack Wilshere's
never really got
career.
Started, did it?
Philippe, you're using the word career at this
No,
juncture.
Because, well, career at the highest level. I mean, because he's one of those players whose contract is under a review at Arsenal. And... it's just absolutely appalling. I mean, the number of ankle injuries he's had ever since the first serious problem he had as a Gunner, which was a while ago, and then since then his ankle has never it's never healed properly. And any physio, any specialist will tell you that it's far worse than, for example, a cruciate. The ankle seems when once it's gone, very very difficult to get it work properly. Especially with so many, which is what happened to Abu Dhabi, for example.
Right, and so many
it's really pretty awful, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's a shame for Jack. We shouldn't have, fingers crossed for that he can return and find
return,
a club that suits him. Interesting that Bournemouth being linked to John Terry for next year's kind of.
Is it Bournemouth has been linked to John Terry,
years.
Or John Terry that's been linked to Bournemouth?
Oh, well, possibly that way around.
Anyway,
that would be an interesting. Combination. This is a big game for them. They've only had 2 wins in the last 10. As I say, they can wrap things up pretty much in terms of safety with a victory against struggling Borough, who are 6 points behind Hull and safety, although they do have a game in hand.
I think the Chelsea player that Bournemouth would like most is Nathan Ake.
Ah, right. Yeah, it's a shame that they lost him. And for what? For what? Hull at home to Watford.
Yeah, biggie, yep. That's a huge game. But Marcus Silva unbeaten in 40 games at home.
Mm.
Andrea Ranocchia playing against his former manager, Walter Mazzarri.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Swansea playing Stoke in what Paul Clement says is their biggest game since the playoff final under Brendan Rodgers.
They'll win that.
Will they?
Stoke is just I don't know what to think of Stoke anymore. They're brilliant one day, absolutely appalling the next.
Well, Swansea are only 2 points behind Hull. So if Hull, say, draw with Watford, then clearly Swansea would have a chance to pull level.
Question, where does that leave West Ham? Because
West Ham, who are playing Everton this weekend. And here's a stat for you, Philippe. Lukaku scored in his last 9 games against West Ham. All of them. Mm. Also this weekend, in a slightly slimmed down Premier League calendar, Burnley hosting Man United, which is... Do you remember when the two teams met at Old Trafford? United had 37 shots on goal. How many did they score with?
Zilch.
None. Tom Heaton. That's why. He made 11 amazing saves. Oh, and Moo got sent off. And they're going to be tired from their clash with Anderlecht this Thursday. Today, in fact.
And quite extraordinarily, Liverpool can go within 2 points of Tottenham.
Can they?
Yep. If they win against Crystal Palace on Sunday,
right,
they will have 69 points to Spurs' 71. Of course, Spurs have got game in hand, but...
Yeah. Are you stating emphatically that Liverpool are going to win the league?
No. I'm not stating it. Well, I'm stating emphatically that they will not win the league.
Mm. Tell you what, let's finish our Premier League chat there, because Philippe, you wanted to have a bit of a rant, didn't you?
No, not a rant. Not one of my famous rants. Mm. I keep that for other subjects these days.
What are we talking about today?
It's just the situation with Lyon is very, very interesting indeed. Because, well, you've seen the incidents with Besiktas fans.
And with Bastia,
With Bastia, that's absolutely appalling. And that's what I wanted to come to, is that today's a very important day, because today is the day that the Disciplinary Commission of the French League is getting together to have a look at what happened and which kind of sanctions and punishment both Bastia in particular will receive.
Yeah.
And I have no doubt, I mean, what's happened at Lyon against Besiktas and in Bastia will have had a huge impact on the players. It's impossible that it's not the case. And I cannot think that they will be in the right state of mind when they play Monaco on Sunday in the... It is a crucial game for them. And to be honest, Lyon, what have they got to fight for in the league? Now Nice is assured of third place and, a place in the Champions League, which is absolutely extraordinary. I'm sure you've already said many great things about Lucien Favre and the work he's done.
All the time.
We speak of little else for Lyon.
Absolutely, which is fantastic. So I'm a little bit worried for Lyon as to what the consequences are going to be. Both in terms of disciplinary punishment
for the game against Besiktas, because there's no question of them having a responsibility for what happened in Bastia. Sure,
you can be absolutely sure that the league will find one way of dragging Lyon into that.
Really?
Yeah.
But what about Bastia?
Because Bastia is going to present their defense. It's completely indefensible. Mm. As far as I'm concerned, they should be excluded from professional football in France.
Bastia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too many things have happened. What happened with Balotelli, what happened with Benjamin Mendy. There's Lucas an element Moura, which is really a criminal element within Bastia, within the club, not just amongst the supporters. And this club needs to be completely,
It's a bit harsh, Philippe.
It's a bit harsh, but I think everybody you would talk to in France and who is not from Bastia or supports Bastia would say exactly the same thing. It's been happening for so long now. Everybody knows about... I mean, you remember what he said, the manager, Cicolini, when after the game against Lyon, when they come to Bastia, we'll welcome them as men, like true Corsicans.
We'll
sort them out. Completely. In any other country.
And they did. Prior to the game, a pitch invasion.
Yep.
Foot players struck at halftime after the game was allowed to go ahead. Once again, fans coming on and stewards and club officials, apparently.
And the stewards, striking one players. Of the responsible for the security of Bastia, has had the cheek to name Lopez, the Lyon keeper, as being a prime element behind the trouble, saying that he started it all. So Bastia will present a defence in which they will try to put some of the blame on Lyon.
Right.
Which is quite extraordinary.
And but the TV pictures are fairly clear on this,
well,
aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Lopez gets a smack around the head and it's absolutely appalling. But this is the LFP, this is the, you know, yeah, this is the French league, anything is possible. But tonight we should have the first indications as to what is going to happen.
All right, Philippe. Worrying.
And there will be a police as well. The justice will probably have to say its word.
Okay.
Well, let's hope so.
Fingers crossed for some justice. Yeah. After this, we're going to look at some happier stories of teams coming back from dark days. Yes, Brighton. Yes, Plymouth. Yes, Portsmouth. Next up, something to put a smile back on the face of football, as Brighton and Hove Albion retake their seat at the top table after more than three decades away, conquering their promotion to the Premier League this Monday with that victory over Wigan, sparking scenes of wild celebration. A.D. Packham, our old friend from Albion Roar radio show and affiliated podcast, joins us now on the line. What have your celebrations been like since Monday?
Well, my head's just about calmed down now, but my celebrations are nothing to that of the players, to be honest. Crowd surfing down trains and being charited down major boulevards of Brighton and leading the chorus line. It's been pretty spectacular celebration.
Wow. Of course, so much frustration has been building up over the seasons. Those playoff exits, so many promotion hopes crushed in the build-up to this one.
Absolutely. I mean, missing out on promotion last year by just goal difference, just two goals, was it was painful, to say the least. But doing it this year certainly added a lot of symmetry to the fact that this coming Wednesday, which is the 26th of April, marks the 20th anniversary of the final game at the Goldstone. And for most of us who are a bit longer in the tooth, we've reached a destination, but it's all been about the journey. We very nearly didn't have a club 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And
I was just rudely interrupting you because, of course, every club coming up now has come. It's obligatory that you have to have been to the brink of disaster, or possibly even beyond. I mean, we've seen this with Leicester to an extent. Portsmouth, I'd argue, have got an even better back from the brink of disaster. What makes your journey so special, AD?
It's, well, we had that do or die issue back in Hereford in 1997. We had bad owners who were asset strippers. They tried to leave our community without a football club. And 20 years on, this is still happening today. I mean, we look at Orient, we look at Coventry, we look at Charlton. It's horrific that this is actually still going on and the FA still do nothing about it. But our journey has been, it's been a long, arduous journey to get to where we are. And without the help of, firstly, Dick Knight, and then latterly, Tony Bloom, whose investment in the club has brought us to the point of where we are now. It's amazing.
What are you most looking forward to about the Premier League?
Playing clubs we haven't played since 1983 would be a good one. It's 34 years since we've been in the top flight.
Wow.
Everyone's going to be looking, of course, at the games against Crystal Palace. Whether we look forward to those or not is another story. But it's just inviting the likes of Manchester United and Liverpool to the Amex. I mean, I was talking to my colleague on the Roar earlier, and we were talking about the journey we've had been on. We had to play our home game 74 miles away in Gillingham. That's the equivalent of Liverpool playing their home games in Shrewsbury. And there was no direct train links to Gillingham. It was it had to be shuttled by buses. So, and now we're going to be going to Everton, we're going to be going to Liverpool, we're going to be going to Man United, Man City, Arsenal. It's going to be crazy.
All right. AD, lastly then, about the team heading into next season, some people would question Chris Hughton's track record at this level. Others might suggest you need to make a lot of investment into the team. What do you think about Brighton's prospects? Are you going to spend a lot of money? Are you good enough as it is? Can Chris Hughton hack it?
Well, firstly, I mean, I think that Chris Hughton's record in the Premiership has been largely overlooked. When various managerial vacancies come up, that he hasn't been in the frame and his name hasn't been mentioned. But I mean, let's when he took Newcastle into the Premier League, But he was doing okay, but they wanted a named manager, and they faltered soon after. Again, with Norwich, when he left, they were heading towards safety. They brought in someone out there for some reason. They brought in someone else. And they were relegated. So, I mean, and in Tuchel's first season with Norwich in the Premier League, they finished 11th. So the history books say it'll be okay. In terms of the team, we've got, you know, there will be investment. Tony Bloom, our chairman, and lifelong Albion supporter, by the way, he's a very, very shrewd gentleman. And our recruitment team have done amazingly well to get the team, not just the team, but the mentality and the togetherness of that squad is absolutely fantastic. And that's what's seen as in particularly good stead, particularly after the disappointments of last season. Now, you know, we've got players in the team. We know for a fact that our central defender, Lewis Dunk, has been looked at as a potential England international. Solly March is playing for the England under-21, that scored a spectacular goal for them a couple of weeks ago. Anthony Knockhart, of course, he had an opportunity when he was promoted to the Premier League with Leicester, but he fell down the pecking order after Riyad Mahrez took his place. But, you know, he's grown up a bit and he's a spectacular footballer. He'll be comfortable at that level. But, of course, we're going to need more firepower. We look at a team like Middlesbrough, who've really struggled to score goals this season. We don't want to be that team. We want to be able to finish our chances. And as a team, we do create a lot of chances.
Hey, brilliant. Well, listen, best of luck for the summer. I hope you enjoy this end of season. You could be crowned champions, I think, tomorrow.
We're at Norwich tomorrow, yeah. So it would be nice for Chris Hughton to win the championship at Carrow Road, yeah. Of course. Mm. But if we don't do it, then we'd like to receive the trophy at the Amex next Saturday against Bristol City, if possible.
Brilliant. All right. Well, listen, your Albion Raw radio show and podcast will no doubt be enjoying a massive influx of listenership on the back of the Seagull success. Best wishes with all of that. We'll catch up with you soon, AD.
Many thanks, James, and we'll speak to you soon.
Do you want some interesting Chris Hughton trivia?
Do I want some?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, my neighbours in the Brixton area of London tell me that as a lad, he was an apprentice lift engineer with Otis in the area.
I read your piece about this, and I also saw. Did you put? Was it a tweet you did?
I just mentioned it in a tweet. He wanted to be a lift engineer, but it didn't work out for him. So he had the football to fall back on.
Right. I saw your tweet about this, and I saw the responses as well that suggested that naturally he's good at going up.
Yeah.
And there was another good one as well. What was the other one?
Going down.
Yeah, going down. That's Brighton up, but of course it's been a South Coast promotion bonanza this week. Because up from League Two, you got Plymouth with a 6-1 win over Newport County. Bang. And Portsmouth as well. They got promoted on Monday. This is huge. And as I was kind of just mentioning there with AD, I mean, anyway, remember the scenes with their fans with buckets outside Fratton Park trying to get enough money together. And they subscribed to £1,000 bonds, a lot of the fans, to raise enough money to keep the club going. And now they're up in League One. It's amazing. Now, in fact, they're subject of a bid from Michael Eisner, formerly of the Walt Disney Corporation.
Really?
American billionaire Michael Eisner. And there's some division in Portsmouth among the fans about whether this is a good thing or not, because having re-established themselves as a, you know, largely fan-going, fan-governed club... They
don't want to go back to being a Mickey Mouse operation.
That's all, folks. That's anyway, we'll see how that works out. Anyway,
Having talked to Pompey fans and yes. people from the Pompey Trust, one of the things that they, with the current structure at kind of League Two level, that's fine because financially they're actually more powerful than the clubs around them.
Ooh.
As soon as they jump one level, they're not anymore.
All right.
And it's very difficult for them to actually acquire the financial weight to be competitive at a higher level.
Step forward, Michael Eisner. Wonder is that fellow with the bell? Is he still there?
Oh, the chap, Deed Paul. He's called what? Something.
Portsmouth
something.
Football Club.
John Portsmouth Football. He's an antique book dealer.
Yes. Right. Anyway, now Plymouth coming up as well, and that's great. James Dart is a big Plymouth fan.
He is.
Good. Well done to them and all the clubs coming up. as the season draws to a close. Speaking of coming to a close, we're not, because we haven't talked about Harry Redknapp yet. How interesting is this? Three games left to go, and they're 3 points off the drop. Zola resigns, and they turn to Harry Redknapp. Mr. Gareth Ease says, will Harry Redknapp's surgeon get the credit he deserves, or he or she deserves, for restoring someone who could apparently barely walk back to a level of fitness required to reclaim any glory that comes with rescuing a side that shouldn't be in any danger of relegation? Okay, Mr. Gareth Ease. All right. Anyway, he's not accepting any money for this.
Well, that's not strictly true.
Okay.
He's managed to convey the impression he's not accepting any money for this, but he is in line for a very big bonus if they stay up, which shouldn't be that difficult.
Because let's remember that they're actually not in the relegation
zone.
They're
not in the relegation zone. Yep. I think two of the places are already well and truly booked. Rotherham are gone. Wigan are in deep trouble. And Blackburn and Forest are between Birmingham City and Wigan. They've got Villa away on Sunday, which is going to be a toughie, and Huddersfield at home after that, and Bristol City. I think they should be okay. I mean, Zola was appointed in mid-December. He's 24 games, won 2, drew 8, lost 14. And he was appointed, and the club director, Panos Pavlakis, said his pedigree fitted with the Blues' ambition to move in a new direction. You know, the obvious gag. yes, Chris Hughton sort of. And Zola basically sacked himself on Monday and said, I can't do anything with this. As far as Birmingham don't seem to have been on telly very often this season. I haven't seen much of them, but I was having a look at one of their fan forums just to see what the state of the nation is. And it seems Zola was just tinkering around, couldn't settle on whether to play back three or back four. He had his players playing out from the back, and they weren't good enough to do that. I think if Harry has anything about him at all, he should be able to keep them up fairly easily and collect a six-figure bonus.
All right. Well, nice. Zola, in many ways, the anti-Harry Redknapp in that sense, in that the team were just outside the playoffs when he took them over.
On goal difference.
And he's dropped them down to the bottom, whereas Harry famously comes in and you know, 2 points from 8 games, and he'll sort that out for you. Good. So will we, Gianfranco Zola, is he going to have a sit down and have a long hard think about his managerial choices, do you think?
Yeah, it's not been a great run for him, has he? I think he was always seen as the sidekick to Pierluigi Casiraghi.
Apparently Casiraghi was part of Zola's backroom staff at Birmingham.
Oh, was he?
Apparently, okay. Yeah.
Is Zola one of these players who's like too good
too
to
nice.
Be a manager? Well, no, too good, but he's with players or in charge of players who just can't do the things that would come naturally to him. You know, I think Glenn Hoddle maybe is another one.
Interesting. Anyway,
Glenn Hoddle was a more than decent manager. I think it'd been a bit harsh to put Franco and Hoddle in the same bag, as it were, for managerial qualities. Certainly, the 1998 England team, I recall as one of the better England teams of
I think
last three decades.
You'd get a better quality of player on the England team than you would at Birmingham
Certainly.
City.
Mm-hmm. There's that.
Well, that sets us up nicely for the weekend then. So off we toddle. Thanks for being with us today, Barry.
Cheers.
James.
Cheers.
And Philippe. Oui. And you, listener, and you, producer Ben. We'll be back on Monday to round the whole thing up. See you then.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.